Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
And welcome to Sci-Fi and Scream here on Joy 94.9. Welcome to show number 101. Now, that track was called Parade by the French dynamic duo Air. The CD album from Air called Le Voyage dans la Lune. It's a classic black and white short silent film. Well, Le Voyage dans la Lune is based, and the music is based on the film. Now, it's by the revered French film director Georges Méliès from 1902, folks, that's quite a while ago, and it's translated as being called A Trip to the Moon. It's rightfully considered one of the most important pieces in cinema history. Itself was inspired by H.G. Wells' stories and Jules Verne. Now, Nicolas Godon and Jean-Benoît Dunkel, of course, are the pair who put Air together, and we probably remember them from way back when they did Our Moons. Okay, this is a modern score to bring the film to the attention of a whole new generation. So it's quite a night tonight. I've got four interviews to be playing this evening. First up is my chat with Alexandre O'Philippe, the Swiss-American filmmaker. He's also a writer and producer of the film The People vs. George Lucas. And that comes out tomorrow on DVD, 22 of February here in Australia. Now, if you want to have a look to see what that's about, you can head to our Facebook address. Just go put the Facebook up and put in Sci-Fi and Scream. Our blog address is scifiandscream.blogspot.com. Or you can go to Joy's website to look for our links as well. Of course, joy.org.au, and find the podcasts that are there. Last week's number 100 show podcast is up and running. So let's get started. Let's have a listen to Alex O'Philippe and The People versus George Lucas. Now, if you don't know what it's about, it's a doco that asks, what just happened to George Lucas? Has he gone to the dark side of the Force? And what about the prequels? Let's not mention Jar Jar Binks. But maybe we will a bit later. This is Sci-Fi and Scream on a Joy 94.9. Alexandre O'Philippe, it's just awesome to have you on the line to talk to us tonight. It's soon to be unleashed on DVD here in Australia, and it's called The People versus George Lucas. Yeah, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
It's going to be distributed here from the 22nd of February on DVD. How's The Force going with you?
The Force? it always fluctuates, but all good. You know, I'm actually working on finishing up my new documentary right now. So it's been a lot of work.
Okay, but looking at this one that's made quite an impact, The People versus George Lucas, can you tell us just a little bit about the film? I know you briefly...
Oh, no, that's fine. I'm used to it. I'm
You're used to it now.
In a nutshell, really, it is about the dysfunctional relationship between George Lucas and his fans over the past 30 years. You know, it's been going on for quite some time. It's, you know, one way to look at it is it was once a beautiful love story, and it turned sour. So the documentary asks essentially why, you know, what happened.
Yes, because the tagline for the film is, they gave him their love, their money, and their obsessive online parodies. He gave them the prequels.
Yes.
You can't go wrong with a tag like that. So is it a love letter to George Lucas that's more like a Dear John letter?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, you know, in fact, Wired magazine, I think, put it best when they said it's a twisted love letter from the fans to George. You know, I think, obviously, what I really wanted to make was, first of all, a cultural documentary, you know, a very objective documentary. I'm not a part of it myself, but obviously I gave platform for the fans and the experts to speak up, and definitely have both sides clashing in the documentary, and oftentimes, you know, it's obviously very, very humorous as well. I mean, I think it's important for people to understand it is an entertaining film, first and foremost.
It's entertaining, and it just basically celebrates that intense relationship that the fans do have, fanboys and fangirls do have to the, not the prequels so much, obviously, but the later three films from A New Hope onwards. How did you manage to locate some of these people, some of these fans? I mean, there must have been so many, and it would have been really hard, I should imagine, to pick and choose.
Yeah, and that's why when we launched our website, our original website, 2007, you know, the idea came to me to make it a participatory film. And, you know, obviously there's no way that we could talk to all the fans that we wanted to talk. It cost us millions and millions of dollars at the end of the day to make this film. And so I wanted to give fans, you know, anywhere around the world with access to a video camera or even a webcam, submit footage to us for possible inclusion in the film. And that's why, you know, the end result is this amazing, you know, tapestry, really, of, you know, rants and, you know, animation, puppets. I mean, it's kind of the ultimate expression of fandom, I think.
And like I think one of the contributors says in the doco, George, you've let us play in the sandpit of your playground, of your imagination, but you're not really paying attention. That's the feeling I got when I previewed it, when I had a look at it. I thought this documentary really spells out what happens when someone you think you know isn't actually the person that you thought you did know. And and now we have the re-release of the prequels. The first one, of course, Phantom Menace, and in 3D. Is that a cynical approach Lucas is making?
Oh, you know, you can go round and round on it. It's very complicated. And I think, strangely enough, I think the relationship between George and the fans has become even more complicated my film was released. I think there's a sense that George is really fed up with the fans. There's a sense, maybe on the other hand, that maybe he's just having a lot of fun with us. You know, because
sadomasochist.
Well, who knows? I mean, it's, you know, when you hear stuff like, I think it was actually, you know, 2 days ago, I had an interview with, I think it was The Hollywood Reporter. He's actually now claiming that Greedo always shot first, you know, in that iconic scene that is obviously debated by the fans. So I just don't know how much he can take seriously anymore. But there's a sense, if he's serious, that he's really, really fed up with the fans. And I think that's sad at the end of the day, because it almost feels to me that George may be losing track of how much people love his movie. And I think the frustration stems from that love. It stems from the fact that we simply want to have the original versions of the original trilogy available. And it's really not too much to ask.
Now, that's a really interesting point that you make in the documentary that you guys make, is about, I guess, the protection of it as a piece of artwork, a significant piece of cinema, not just American cinema, but pop culture cinema. You know, it's a definitive piece of film. Where is it? The original copies, it kind of left me hanging, thinking and concerned about the state of the original.
Well,
do you know about that?
You know, obviously there's prints out there. I mean, you know, we know that much. There was a statement from Lucasfilm, you know, years ago. Basically, they were saying that the original negatives had been permanently altered for the creation of the special edition, which is borderline criminal. I mean, but not only that, but it's not really credible. In fact, they've really backtracked from that story. Then, you know, George's latest argument is that it would cost too much money, you know, to restore this film, which is, I mean, ludicrous coming from a guy, you know, who's sitting on a, you know, $30 billion empire. So all these arguments are, you know, I mean, they don't make any sense. They're not really believable. They're not credible. So I think that the only conclusion one can come to is basically George Lucas does not want to release those. He wants to make us forget. That's not going to happen.
Hi, this is the fabulous Adam Richard on Sci-Fi and Scream! No, I'm not scary. Sorry.
That was fab, definitely.
I'm Lucky McKee, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
I'm Sonia, and this is Sci-Fi and Scream. And that was a little bit of Adam Richard going a bit haywire there, but that just is to remind you, Outland is on tomorrow night. It is episode number 3, uno, dos, tres. Yes, it's number 3, and there's only 3 more to go after that. So head on to your television set and look up that national broadcaster we have, and wait for 9:30, because that's when Outland's on. So if you want to store up on some more geeky goodness, gay geeky goodness, you need to watch that. Now, I was talking to The People versus George Lucas, the movie director, and that was very good indeed. So I've got the rest of it here. So we'll play that now, and we'll listen to what he thinks about the prequels, what he thinks has happened to George since that time, and also what he's up to next.
key, because legally, of course, it is your job, and nobody can test that. And in fact, I don't think the fans are even saying, George, we don't want you to, you know, give us your own version of the film. I mean, at the end of the day, it is his film. He can do whatever he wants. However, I think when a film becomes as important as Star Wars and is embraced by culture the way Star Wars has been, I think you can certainly make the argument that it also belongs to us, you know, culturally. I mean, it is very much a part of our cultural heritage. You know, I think by any standard, it's an extremely important set of movies. So does a creator have a moral obligation to ensure that that important film, that an important moment, really, in our culture, is preserved? Posterity, I think, does. I think he absolutely has that responsibility. But, you know, the law hasn't quite caught up.
I agree with you. To me, it's like the Magna Carta of sci-fi fantasy or space opera, whatever you like to call it. It's absolutely the beginning of everything, absolutely, from merchandising, from marketing, and from just this, you know, enrapture that fans get. It's, I hate to say it, but bigger than Star Trek would ever be.
And it's funny because, you know, people will accuse fans of nitpicking, but to be perfectly honest, and I'm not saying this as a fan, I'm saying this as a film buff, you know, somebody who really cares about culture and about cinema. You know, if you look at, you know, watching the special edition is a very, very distinct experience from watching the original Star Wars movie. It's not the same thing. And to understand why we were so crazy about those films when we were kids, one has to look at the original cut. I mean, period. So I think those need to be made available, and they need to be restored. And if George doesn't want to do it, all he has to do, frankly, is just give it the Criterion Collection. And I'm sure they'd be more than happy to restore the films. You know what I mean?
Exactly. George Lucas's response to your film, what feedback have you got from the master himself?
I think he's been very good at skirting the issue.
Oh, okay.
No, he never, ever mentions the film. I think that's always been part of the plan. But yet, it's been really interesting for me to kind of follow what he's been saying, and, you know, in the media since my film has been released. And there's always a sense that clearly very aware of it. He's not going to make any more Star Wars movies. And he says, why should I make more Star Wars movies when all the fans are telling me how terrible of a person I am? It's such an extreme reaction, I think. Well, clearly, maybe it's a reaction to myself. At the end of the day, I just hope he's watched it. I hope he understands it's not an attack against him. I think the film is very loving. The love from the fans really comes across.
It's a marriage. And sense that. You know, it's like a marriage between fans and the person that they adore. I mean, we do adore those films.
Absolutely. And you know, I just comes to terms, you know, to peace with the fans, you know, because I think that frustration that some call hate really stems from the fact that they just love what he's done so much. And I hope he realizes that.
All right. On a different topic, what's coming up next for you? You said you're working on another doco. Can you talk about that?
Yes. It's The Life and Times of Paul the Psychic Octopus. It's called The Life and Times of Paul Psychic Octopus. Psychic Octopus that predicted the outcome of the games
the
during
World
the
Cup.
Football World Cup.
Right.
The official film about Paul, and we're anticipating we're starting to come out in May.
Next year. Okay, cool. Well, that sounds pretty interesting. That's quite a different tangent to take before your topics.
Yeah, it's still pop culture, you know. I'm always hovering around those you know, pop culture icons.
And I think what you've done, when you started thinking about this project, The People versus George Lucas, back in 2007, it's taken this long, but has it been worth the trip?
Has it been worth it? Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's been hard. It was a really tough film to make on a lot of levels. You know, it took a lot out of me, took a lot of resources, of energy, of money, of everything you can imagine. But it's been very rewarding, you know, first to have had the festival run we've had, you know, secondly to have so many, you know, wonderful distributors taking on the film, both, you know, theatrically and on DVD. And just to see the reactions from, you know, Star Wars fans, I think I've really enjoyed it and embraced the film. And that's, you know, it's been really fun. Hopscotch DVD coming out in Australia. And they put a lot of effort into selecting some really cool special features. Yeah, I just hope it's a hit in Australia.
Excellent. I want to thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with us today here on Sci-Fi and Squeam.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay, Alexandra O'Philippe. Yeah, all the best for the future and the documentary about Paul the psychic soccer or football-loving octopus film.
Okay, hold on. Sci-Fi and Queen?
Squeam.
Hi, this is Alexandra O'Philippe, director of The People versus George Lucas, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Thank you very much. Good one.
Does that work?
Yeah, that's fine. That's excellent. Oh, what's the website? What's your website so people can go and find out more about your...
Sure. It's peoplevsgeorge.com. They can also join us on Facebook.
May the force be with you.
You too.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye.
Hi, this is Oscar Hillestrom, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Welcome back. Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. Well, that was the awesome director for a documentary that has only made it to DVD here in Australia, as far as I'm aware. A little bit sad, but hey, any opportunity we have to see anything about George Lucas and looking at a different perspective about is, well, I always think, very interesting indeed. Up next is an interview with a man who is putting together a sci-fi writing course here in Melbourne, Australia. His name's Luke Devenish, and he is a writer for television and scripts and so forth. You can head to our Facebook page to find out more about the man himself, but here's what he had to say about this brand new course, the first of its kind in Melbourne, in any case, that I'm aware of. This is Sonia, and this is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. Welcome to Sci-Fi and Squeam. I have on the line here Luke Devenish. Now, Luke Devenish is a teacher. He is a teacher, and he's doing something quite unique, as far as I'm concerned anyway, and that's a course, a very short course, a writing sci-fi for TV and film course at the Wheeler Centre in Melbourne on the, what is it, the 25th of Feb? 25th or 26th?
On the 25th and the 26th of February. That's a Saturday and Sunday.
Okay. So welcome to the show. How are you, Luke?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
That's all right. That's cool. And so, yes, I came across this in a certain science fiction genre wonderful magazine, and I just flipping through the pages and found the Australian Film and Television Radio School, or AFTERS Open, with this course that was being advertised, writing sci-fi for TV and film, which is fantastic. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, this is a new thing for AFTERS. First of all, I should say that I'm a screenwriter also a novelist, so I work in television. I also do a lot, I teach screenwriting and have done so at AFTERS for about 10 years. I've taught a lot of classes for them. I've also taught for RMIT and NIDA over the years as well. I work with a lot of students, as well as writing for myself, of course. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I've encountered a lot, and the idea came from me, was that I always have a percentage of students in each class that I teach, and it's the same every time. There's a clear percentage of students that just love sci-fi to death.
Mm.
And they are so keen to create stories for that genre. And I always try to do a component of sci-fi in any of the screenwriting courses that I teach.
Okay.
But I just became, you know, really aware that there's actually very little out there which is dedicated wholly to that genre, particularly in Australia. It was my proposal to AFTERS that we put together some courses that are specific to that genre, because I'm very confident that there's sort of a large subset of people out there that would really, really like to learn more about it with a view to ultimately creating stories for it, where it's all come from.
So we've got two types of courses. You've got the weekend, more of a crash course, and then it's an online 10-week course from April.
That's right. Yeah, the weekend one is going to be pretty intensive. It's going to be a sort of give a really good overview of every single aspect of the genre, looking at all the different, you know, variations and subgenres that come with it, looking at examples of those, and also having some really quite fun hands-on sort of exercises for participants to sort of be able to create a whole lot of potential stories for the genre and characters for the genre that they may not have thought themselves capable of creating. So it's about sort of freeing up your creative processes, if you like. And for the online course, which starts a little bit later in April, this is something we do a lot of at AFTERS, and I've run a lot of these courses, where we sort of work in chat room, and there's also some weekly assignments and viewings and so forth. This one, there'll be a lot of similarities, the weekend workshop, in that we will be covering a lot of the same ground. Going to have many, many more assignments. It's actually going to be far more hands-on, you know, very sort of creative and practically based. You know, there's something in either of those for any sort of aspiring sci-fi writer I have to offer you.
Very exciting. Will you be looking at anything in particular, any TV series in particular, or in general, is it more?
Well, certainly be looking at all the various genres. So we'll be looking at what I call the subgenres of sci-fi. So we'll be looking at space operas, looking at the endless, endless as endless alien invasion movies, and yes. also their little spin-off of the monster flick. We'll be looking yes. at artificial intelligence stories, robots, clones, androids, that sort of thing. Looking at dystopias, a particular favourite of mine. I always yes. like dystopic stories. We'll be looking at the old fan favourite, the apocalypse tale. We'll be examining time travel.
Goodness.
Exhaustive.
I'm just thinking that sounds like my show. Yes, just by you saying those, some of those titles, some of those subjects, yeah, it sounds like what I've been doing for the last 2 years.
Oh, great. Well, if only you could time travel back to episode one.
Oh, yes.
And change your reality.
Yeah. Oh,
you could.
There's a lot of things I'd do differently, for sure.
I bet there is. We all say that. Well, that sort of leads me on to alternate realities, which okay. we're going to be looking at similar depth. And also, mm-hmm. last but by no means least, we're going to be looking at the superhero genre.
Oh, which, excellent.
Is a little contentious for some people. They don't feel it belongs in the sci-fi genre, but I feel it very much does.
Well, I think Spider-Man would definitely be up there, and Superman,
yeah.
I mean, from outer space, one
yeah,
of them.
You know.
And
say,
Experiment,
you know,
the other one?
Oh, I'm totally with you. I think Iron Man belongs in that genre. I still
think
the X-Men there. But, you know, some people go, Thor, don't know if that fit. You know?
Fantasy, you know, a little
I can
bit
see
more.
Where they're coming from.
You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
This is Mark Shepherd. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
What a great voice Mark Shepherd has, a brilliant voice. And, of course, I'll be podcasting all 1 hour and 49 minutes and 51 seconds of that interview I had back on February the 2nd. Of course, I will soon. Very soon. Now I'm going to go back to Luke Devenish now here on Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Luke has more to say. Go with the force, Luke. Let's hear what this writer of things like Something in the Air, he's been editor for drama with the Australian Broadcast Commission, our corporation, I beg your pardon. He's worked on things like Sea Change, Raw FM, Neighbours and Home and Away. And now he's dabbling in sci-fi. Why not? This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Brilliant.
Good.
No, so how can people find out more about the Sci-Fi for TV and Film writing course? Where should they go?
Yes, it's very easy to find out. What I'd encourage you to do, if you are interested in finding out more about this course, including prices and all the rest of it, to get your search engine up on the computer and type in AFTRS, open courses.
As simple as that.
Simple as that. And you will be taken to the website where it lists all the open courses, the open program that ARFSIS runs. And it's quite extensive. You'll find the sci-fi one listed there. It's unmissable. And you can roll or find out additional information. There's also numbers if you wish to ring. But it's all very easily done.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'd be delighted to have any Joy listeners come and join me on a sci-fi excursion.
All right, well, thank you so much for talking to us, Luke Devenish. Where do you work normally? You work at Monash, is that right?
No, I work all over the place. I do
all over the place.
Yeah, I teach for AFTRS. I'm about to start teaching for VCA. I do television development work, so I write for, or do work for a number of production companies around the place, and I write novels, so I do whatever.
Right, yes. You're a busy guy.
Yeah.
Any sci-fi books that you've done?
I haven't done sci-fi books, but no? I intend to. I've written historical fiction,
mm-hmm.
but I'm unable to turn off my creative head when it comes to conceiving sci-fi ideas. So it is among my future plans.
It sounds like it.
To write in the genre, yeah.
Mm. All right, excellent. Thanks for listening to us. Oh, what am I saying? Thanks for me listening to you. I'm going to really cut that out because I don't know what I'm saying now. Thanks for joining us here on Sci-Fi and Scream, Luke.
My pleasure.
May the force be with you.
Thank you. And you. Oh, I'll try to think something that'll be something sci-fi-ish.
Yes.
Of it.
You're creative. You can do it.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking.
Got you on the spot.
It put me on the spot. I'm just trying to think of a quote from Battlestar Galactica. But can I think of one at this moment in time? I don't think. Okay, all right, I'm going to chuck something in. All right.
Go for it.
Okay, I'm Luke Devenish from AFTRS's brilliant sci-fi writing course that I hope you'll all do, and you are listening to Joy 94.9, the best sci-fi show on the nation.
Okay, well, cool. Look, thanks for your time. This is Sci-Fi and Scream. That was a little bit more of Air. It's nothing like more Air to get us going this evening. That was Retour sur Terre, and that's from Air's new album, Le Voyage dans la Lune. I'm slightly getting better at my français. I don't know, what do you think? To something different again. This time, it's Kelsey Edwards. That's the name of the woman that I interviewed last week. Who is she? Well, Kelsey Edwards is a producer of a film called Wonder Woman, The Untold Story of American Superheroines. It was formerly known as The History of the Universe as Told by Wonder Woman, and it traces the fascinating evolution and legacy of Wonder Woman from the birth of the comic book superheroine in the 1940s to the blockbusters of today. Wonder Woman looks at how popular representations of powerful women often reflect society's anxieties about women's liberation. Wonder Woman goes behind the scenes with Linda Carter, also known as Wonder Woman from the 70s TV show, Lindsay Wagner from none other than the Bionic Woman, also from the 70s. She also looks at comic writers and artists and real-life superheroines like Shelby Knox and others who offer an enlightening and entertaining counterpoint to the male-dominated superhero genre. Now, I've got some interesting facts about the mythos of Wonder Woman. The story of the creation of it by DC Comics and this particular character was by a man called William Moulton Marston, was also known by his pen name as Charles Moulton. He was an American psychologist, a feminist theorist, can't get that right, can I? Inventor and comic book writer who created the character Wonder Woman. And there were two very special women in his life, his wife, Elizabeth Holloway Marston, and Oliver Byrne. And what was very interesting and intriguing is they lived in a polyamorous relationship all their lives. They served as exemplars for the character, those two women in his life, and they greatly influenced the creation of Wonder Woman. So sexual freedom and true liberalism in the United States seem to be at the core of the global comic character known as Wonder Woman. There are plenty of other fascinating little morsels. You can head to our Facebook page of Sci-Fi and Squeam to find some links to lots more. Let's listen to Kelsey now. Kelsey Edwards, a producer of this film, and hear just what it's all about and where they're up to, because they're in post-production still at the moment, and they will be going to premiere the film at the South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, in the US in March. This is Sonia, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. To welcome you to Sci-Fi and Squeam, Kelsey Edwards, so glad you could join us this evening. You've recently come back from Berlin, so I appreciate your time tonight for our show and managing with your jet lag, of course.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, happy to join you.
Okay, cool. Can you briefly quick rundown about what Wonder Woman, The Untold Story of American Superheroines is all about? It's quite a title. It certainly catches the imagination.
Great. Well, thank you. Well, it's a feature documentary project. I'm the producer and the director is Christy Guevara Flanagan. The thrust of it is we sort of take the story of Wonder Woman, who is the longest running female superheroine, and explore her story as a means of looking at how representations of female power have changed over time, particularly in pop culture. And her character is a great platform because, you know, she begins in comics and then moves on to television in the 70s with a show that stars Linda Carter.
Yeah.
And then arguably sort of blows the lid off the genre, you know, makes room for all these kind of TV and blockbuster big screen action heroines, like everyone from Xena to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And the film is kind of exploring that whole concept of a female superheroine and how we conceive of her.
Oh, good. Yeah, look, you've got some great people that are involved, including, like you said, you mentioned Lindsay Wagner, some comic writers and artists, real life superheroines such as Gloria Steinem, Shelby Knox, and others. And I believe you've also got from La Tigra, from Riot Girl, their involvement, which is fabulous.
And Kathleen Hanna was
Yes, because I think our listeners would appreciate that added extra to what looks like it's a great concept. What attracted you as a producer to something like this? Is this what you would normally be interested in getting involved with?
You know, it's one of those projects. I was a former professor of mine put me in touch with Christy. I was actually just finishing grad school and looking for a feature project to produce. And he said, well, I've got a friend you should talk to.
Yeah.
I think we just reminded him of one another, and we both had films at Silver Docks that year. It's a documentary film festival here in the States, and he said, you guys should meet up at Silver Docks, and we did, and, you know, it's one of those, like, she watched my film, and I watched her film, and we met. We like to say it started with, like, a girl crush. We each thought the other was cool.
Cool.
It's a cool-sounding project. I mean, you can't really pass something like that up. I know Christy had the idea because she had read an article, I think it was in the New York Times, about Gail Simone, and
right.
She, in 2008, was hired to write Wonder Woman, and at that point, you know, Wonder Woman had been around for, I think it was 67 years, and she was the first female author to be hired to tell her story. That's kind of, you know, that fact just really struck Christy, that this icon of feminism and this, I don't know, like the most recognizable female superheroine had all this time just until that moment, you know, written by men. That made her curious and want to explore more. And so that was sort of the starting point for the whole film.
Whereas I realize that obviously you're not the director, so it sounds like Christy had a real handle, a real interest in that whole genre. Has that affected you? Are you reading comics now or looking into superheroines? Had an influence.
What's funny is actually neither of us were big comic book fans so much growing up. I mean, we've talked about this. It's funny. Christy was more influenced by the TV show. And I actually, that was a little bit before my time, but, and I can't speak for her kind of, you know, other influences. I know there are many, but I know for me, I never really thought of myself as a genre fan, but I know that, I mean, I was a big reader. In fact, what's funny is what turned me off of comics a little bit were like my first exposure to comics were like the Archie comics, which is one of the things that, you know, it's like what you're handed as a little girl. Like, oh, check this out. You'll like this. There are girls in this. And that just the characters seemed so weak. And the thing that I remember really loving early on was Nancy Drew. Do you remember those? Yeah. I mean, I loved these and, you know, and everything kind of across the board. I mean, even my music taste, that's where it was more telling. I always sort of sought out the male singers. It always seemed kind of odd to me that so many songs were written by men. And this is something that Kathleen Hanna pointed out. Somebody, I think we have a clip of it, or soundbite we're using in the film at some point where, you know, she's on the archival of her on stage, and she said, you know, people are always asking why aren't more girls in dance, and her answer is, it's like, duh. And I love it, you know, that's kind of how I felt growing up. You know, I was sort of seeking out the female singers.
Hi, and welcome to Sci-Fi and Scream. My name is Nichols Winding Refn, and this is one of my favorite shows.
I'm Japanese. Nishimura Yoshihiro desu. Soshite.
And this is Mark Walko, and we are from Sushi Typhoon.
Yay! This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
I couldn't really look for a female vocalist that happened to sing in the style I liked because there were so few female vocalists. So I was always kind of like, well, I like Janis Joplin, I like Tracy Chapman, and I like 10,000 Maniacs, and I like PJ Harvey.
Of course.
I like the Pixies. Yeah. Like, none of these bands really had anything in common. I only later thought about it and said, oh yeah, well, they all had women. Like, that's what I was looking for. And I didn't even, like, actively know it. I just, you know, when I found a woman singing, I cherished it. And that's a common theme in the film, like women of a certain age, women who are old enough to not have grown up with Buffy, you know, all kind of remember the, you know, unusual cases of women being featured in anything in a kind of strong, foregrounded kind of way.
Look, this is clearly a work of a passion for both of you and for all the other people involved. And so I believe it is it March when it debuts? Is that the actual festival in March, South by Southwest?
It is, and you know, the festival, it's the 9th through the 17th, and they're actually announcing the schedule tomorrow.
So exciting.
We've been told the first screening will be sometime between the 9th and the 13th.
9th and 13th.
And then there'll be a couple screenings after that.
Okay. Guys, that's a fantastic festival to be involved in.
Oh, yeah, I'm very excited. I'm from Austin originally. So it just kind of randomly worked out that accepted us for the world premiere. So I'm particularly excited because it's a homecoming of sorts. Like everyone I went to, you know, high school with and college with and, you know, played in bands with and my early films with can all kind of show up and
support you.
Crazy.
We do want to see more superheroines. We're seeing them a little bit here and there, like the Joss Whedon, the Avengers, his version of that. We see one superheroine in there. But it would be fantastic to see a woman director and a woman producer make some, personally for me, some fiction that would be led by a superheroine. Wonder Woman would be definitely one of choice. Funding. Okay, so I think I mentioned off air about Kickstarter. That's very important for getting the film up and going, isn't it? Is that proving to be helpful?
Absolutely. I don't even know how people did it before Kickstarter. Maybe Kickstarter was born out of need because so many of the funding, the resources people used to rely on just kind of shriveled up and died. I don't know, but it has been our lifeline. We're on our second Kickstarter. Kickstarter right now. We had another kind of critical juncture where we raised some money that way, and this time we're doing it to literally complete the film and get ourselves and some of our main characters to the festival.
So you're at 60%, I noticed on the blog there. I don't know what date that was. 60% of your Kickstarter fundraising goals being met. Are you pretty happy with that?
Yeah, I mean, we're looking for 100.
Yeah, of course.
I hope we'll get there. There's been a ton of support and a ton of really kind of positive interest in the film. It's been very exciting. I mean, Huffington Post.
Yes, I saw that.
It's been incredible, and that's been unsolicited, and that's been kind of the most exciting part. We haven't had, the funding or the time.
In
some cases, like, people get publicity because they hire publicists. We're still fundraising to finish the film, so.
And I guess it helps with, like you said, fans, bloggers, websites, and that sort of thing. It's probably helped push it along a bit. So where to next? I mean, you're in post-production now, is that right?
We're in the final stages. I mean, we have to lock picture soon just to be ready for the premiere.
Yeah.
But we've been working up to the, we've been in the 11th hour finishing everything, which I hear is not unusual for film festivals, which, difficult it is for independent filmmakers these days to sort of bring everything together. It really is a sort of, you have to be a force of nature to get it all done.
Excellent. After the Texas premiere, in Austin, what happens to the documentary then? Is it a matter of people picking it up from there, from that festival?
Yeah, the trajectory of these projects are kind of hard. The exact trajectory is hard to anticipate. Mm. My best guess is that we'll have a few premieres. You have your world, international, East Coast, West Coast, and then, European, so on and so forth. So we have the other festivals that we're going to... And there's been some interest from some really incredible festivals that we'd be honored to screen at. Seattle and Hot Docs and Sheffield and... But, the festival circuit is one thing. We're also trying to license the film for broadcast, reach the broadest possible audience, especially, and this is just such a great idea of Christie's and something I really admire about her as a filmmaker. She really values reaching out to younger women in particular. When she made this film, she had kind of a similar goal in mind, and that she would create something that would educate younger people about the history of feminism in a way that they could wrap their minds around, that wasn't just kind of dry and romantic. It's actually entertaining and engaging and fun. It makes you want to go seek out, all these role models and identify your own and consider your own strengths in light of this amazing history. So yeah, I think ultimately we'd like educational distribution, broadcast, community screenings.
Any word about any interest in Australia from here?
Spread the word. I want to come to Australia. Absolutely.
Oh, please do. And you've got to come on my show, both of you, if you get an opportunity. I'd love that.
We would love to. I mean, there's so many. I admire the film scene in Australia and would be honored to show at a festival there.
Yeah.
I would love it.
Just where can people go to find out more? You've got a website, obviously. Find out more about the film, Wonder Woman, The Untold Story of American Superheroines, and also how they can do their part by getting involved with Kickstarter. Where should they go?
Thank you for asking that. Actually, we have our website is the best way to get more information on the project, and there are links to our Kickstarter. There's information on how to support the project and information on the project itself. But the website currently is www.vaquerafilms.com/Wonder Woman. Vaquera Films is Vaquera Films, and then / Wonder Woman, and Vaquera is actually Spanish for cowgirl.
All right.
VaqueraFilms.com.
Cowgirl, that's cool.
Wonder Woman, The Untold Story of American Superheroines.
Right, but it will be known, I reckon it would be known as that Wonder Woman movie, the one. That's what people will probably say in a few months' time. The one. Oh, yes, the documentary one. Yeah, that's the one. Hey, all the best. I appreciate your time tonight to talk to us here on Sci-Fi and Scream. Love to see it come down under. Coming soon, Wonder Woman, The Untold Story of American Superheroines, here on Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Hi, Pollyanna McIntosh. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
This indeed is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. That was Kelsey Edwards. She is one of the people involved in creating something called Wonder Woman, The Untold Story of American Superheroines, and we hope it does come to Oz. Now, I'd like to say that Eric, thank you very much for sending in your text message, that he's really enjoyed the interview with Luke Devenish, which is great, and he says, it sounds like a very rewarding course. Pity that... He says he can't write. I'm sure you can, Eric. Anyone can write. Okay, love my French pronunciations as well. Okay, thanks for the support. Now, up next, we are going to talk to Emily Maguire, and she's going to talk to me about sex on television. Yeah, sex on television, that's what we need more of. No, seriously, she's talking about cable and syndicated shows like Game of Thrones, True Blood, of course, which we love here on Sci-Fi and Scream. And yeah, she's an author, she's a writer, she's a journalist and a feminist. And this is what she's got to say about the whole deal. This is Sonia on Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy in 94.9. To Sci-Fi and Scream. And on the line, I've got author, writer, Emily Maguire. It's to talk about the live in the studio panel session, which is called Sex, Lies and Television Screens on the 23rd of February. And that's this week. So that's this Thursday at Acme. Welcome to the show, Emily.
Thank you.
TV screens these days, particularly, I guess, cable, syndicated TV, is full of a lot of sauciness. There's plenty of sex out there, it seems. And it seems to have quite an effect on massive growing following. I believe you're going to be talking about some of the more violent and bloody of them. Game of Thrones, Dexter, True Blood, of course.
Yeah, Rome, the Tudors, quite a few of them now. And it's come about, I guess, from the rise of cable TV, HBO and Showtime, which aren't bound by those same restrictions in the US that the old classic networks like ABC and NBC have. So, you know, because they can have a lot of nudity and violence, some of them seem to be really pushing the envelope in terms of how much they can actually fit in and pretend it's part of the narrative.
No, I've noticed that. It's certainly... First time I saw True Blood, I was like, wow. Wow, this is amazing. And that was, a few years now. It's had a massive impact. Do you think True Blood was one of the first ones that...
Yeah, True Blood's really interesting because of the way that it actually combines the sex and the violence. Because, there's kind of three things we talk about. There's sex, and we all know what that looks like, and there's violence, and we all know what that looks like. But then there's sexual violence, which is dealt with in a show like True Blood and Game of Thrones as well, as sometimes it's very straightforward that what we're seeing is a rape or an act of coercion, and it's sexual violence. But other times, the apparently consensual sex is moving into S&M territory and the more hardcore things you can show now. So there's actually a really kind of a lot of nuance in there and there's a lot of discussion to be had about what True Blood is showing in terms of sexuality and violence.
One of the things I wanted to touch on and talk to you about was women's involvement in TV as writers and contributors to those sort of productions. There is a myth that there are more women involved now, but I did do a little bit of just some blogs and IndieWire.com about women in Hollywood, etc. Some of those statistics from, I know, August of last year, but probably still relevant. Is there any sort of link, do you think, with the violence? I mean, I personally don't have a problem with it, otherwise I wouldn't watch horror films. But I know, just judging from your own background and some of the novels and non-fiction works that you've done, do you think this presents a problem, or is there any relevance to that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the statistics for women writers and producers and directors and all the kind of behind the scenes power positions in Hollywood and in TV are absolutely shocking. I mean, it is getting better, but it's still a really, really male world. And I think you can definitely see that in a lot of TV that you watch. But interestingly, I find not so much in these kind of shows we're talking about. And it's quite complicated. But I mean, even though maybe up front Game of Thrones, for example, there's, boobs bouncing around everywhere in every background decoration. But at the same time, the actual narratives, the stories that are presented and the way they're presented are far more feminist, almost, certainly female-driven, women are presented as complex characters, a lot more compelling from a female point of view, I think, than something like, Two and a Half Men or The Kardashians. Yeah. This kind of more PG-rated mainstream TV that was dominated by male writers, which tend to not cast women in these kind of compelling roles where they're also competing for power and doing all those things that the women in True Blood or Game of Thrones or whatever are doing.
I'm wondering if writers, male or female, who find themselves in those syndicated shows, they go, yippee, I reckon we can push the envelope and we can finally do what we you know, we'd love to do and we're passionate about.
I think perhaps where the lack of women in the writing room or in the production decisions does come into it, that is, as I said, we have a lot of boobs bouncing around in the background of these shows, but we don't have quite so many naked male bodies that are there.
Good point.
So it's still a heterosexual male kind of dedic, I guess, but even though, yeah, the envelope is being pushed and the storylines, like I said, a lot of them are just amazing female characters that are getting real strong storylines. If we think about who's kind of designed this of what they want to look at, it's still very heterosexual male world.
I'm Darren from the DK comic published by Dark Oz, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
We just heard something from Emily Maguire. Now I'll podcast the full interview with her. She's the author, journalist, feminist. That's going to be at ACME this Thursday the 23rd, along with people like John Richards, the creator of Outland. They're going to be talking lots of sexy stuff about sex, television, lies on our TV screens. It should be pretty interesting. It's also an R-rated event, so you must have identification and be at least over 18. I am serious, from 18 and older. Now, coming up next, we've got Salt and Pepper with Serena and Pete, only on Joy 94.9. And I'd just like to say, if you want to find out more about Kelsey Edwards and that particular film that's been made, the Wonder Woman movie, head to our Facebook, I should say, Sci-Fi and Scream Facebook. Right, we're going to go out now. Want to say thank you and have a good evening. Vampires, zombies, ghouls and creatures from outer space. No, it's not Federal Parliament, it's Sci-Fi and Scream, only on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.